until his head came up sharply, and he stepped back a pace. Kasser glared at him.
What is it? Is there a question of identity?
No, Your Grace. They are who they claim to be. It's just that I sense not two minds, but three. The Lady Letitia is pregnant, and not by the groom.
For a moment, there was a shocked silence, and then uproar filled the ballroom. Robert stared open-mouthed at Letitia, who stared numbly back at him. Had there been someone special, he'd asked, and she'd said yes. Kasser tore the golden cord from their wrists and threw it to one side. It seemed like everyone was shouting and screaming at everyone else, and swords were appearing in hands. Space grew around the white-faced bride as people fell back rather than be contaminated by her presence. Adrienne tried to get to her, but was held back by the crush of the crowd. For bringing a sullied bride to a joining of clans, the Shreks would be ostracized by society. It was the ultimate insult. The Shreks were yelling that they knew nothing of it, but no one was listening. Robert started toward Letitia, not knowing what he was going to say or do, only drawn on by the misery in her face. And then Gregor Shrek burst out of the crowd, the golden wedding cord in his hands. His face blazed with fury, and Letitia shrank back from him. Before anyone knew what he planned, he had the golden cord round Letitia's throat and pulled it tight. Her eyes bulged as she fought for breath, and she clawed helplessly at the Shrek's wrists. He swung her round, put his knee in her back, and tightened his hold, the muscles standing out in his arms. Robert plunged forward to stop him, but then strong arms were holding him back, no matter how he struggled. William and Gerald held him firmly, their faces cold and dispassionate. Letitia's face was horribly red, and her tongue protruded from her mouth. There was shouting and some screaming from the crowd, but no one went to help her. Robert fought savagely, but William and Gerald held him fast. He called her name, and didn't know he was crying. Letitia sank to the floor, held up only by the Shrek's strangling grip. The ballroom slowly grew silent as the end drew near, until the only sounds in the chamber were Gregor's panting breath, Letitia's last choking gasps, and Robert's racking sobs. And then her eyes rolled up, and she was silent, and Gregor slowly relaxed his grip. She fell limply to the floor and lay still. Gregor turned to face Finley, his face red from his exertion, his breathing unsteady.
I make apologies for my clan and present this death as atonement. I trust this is sufficient?
It is. Honor is satisfied. We will discuss the choosing of another bride at a later date that the wedding may proceed in the future. This ceremony shall be forgotten and never referred to again.
He nodded to William and Gerald, who released Robert. He stumbled forward to kneel at Letitia's side. Finley gathered up the rest of the Campbells with his eyes and led them out of the ballroom. The Shreks followed, and the Wolves, and finally the vicar James Kasser and his people. Until only Robert Campbell was left, kneeling by his dead bride, holding her still white hand in his. Outside in the corridor, Gregor Shrek looked across at his favored daughter, Evangeline. Let her take a lesson from this. He'd kill her too if he had to keep his secret safe. He'd done it before. He smiled slightly. He'd murdered the original Evangeline, because she wouldn't love him as he loved her, as a man loved a woman. He was the Shrek, and he would be obeyed. Going Underground.
The trouble in dealing with underground movements, thought Valentine Wolfe waspishly, is that sometimes they take the name too literally.
He struggled on through the narrow service duct, shoulders hunched and head down, to keep from banging it on the low tunnel roof. It stretched endlessly away before him, cramped and gloomy and unreservedly depressing. Low-intensity lamps hung down from the roof at regular intervals, providing just enough light to make him squint painfully. An insane tangle of interwoven cables stretched along the walls and ceiling,
color-coded in a way that presumably made sense to someone. He was deep in the guts of the world, in its hidden underside, the maze of sewers and access tunnels and service ducts that linked the varying self-contained worlds that existed within Golgotha. Although the complicated maze was necessary for the inner world's survival, few people ever thought of them. Only service personnel were authorized to use the passageways, but then Valentine was used to being in places he wasn't supposed to be. His lip curled in disgust as the slime he was treading in grew steadily deeper. It was already lapping at the ankles of his very fashionable thigh-length leather boots and was doing nothing at all for their shine. Valentine didn't know what the slime was and didn't feel in the least like investigating its nature. He'd discarded the frailer parts of his outfit before setting out, replacing them with more robust and anonymous items, and wrapped himself in a long black cloak. He'd wiped the heavy makeup from his face, tied back his long hair in a functional braid, and together with his new outfit, he presented a quite different appearance, which was just as well. It wouldn't do for anyone to discover Valentine Wolfe attending meetings of the Clone and Esper Undergrounds. They wouldn't understand. It was a shame he'd had to rush away so soon after the wedding debacle. He'd expected a dull and lifeless affair, followed by appalling food and worse dancing, but in the end it had turned out to be rather amusing. He stopped suddenly and peered suspiciously about him in the gloom. He wasn't that far from one of the main sewer offshoots, according to the map he'd memorized earlier. There were all kinds of stories about what strange and malignant creatures flourished in the sewers. Also, according to rumor, sewer workers received battle pay and bonuses for the heads of anything they brought back with them. Not that Valentine ever listened to such stories. He looked round sharply, sure he'd picked up something just at the edge of his hearing, but there was only the silence and the gloom. He concentrated, and deep within his body, drug caches dumped their loads into his systems. His breathing quickened and deepened as his metabolism speeded up, ready for action. He was stronger, faster, sharper now, and more than ready for whatever was out there. He grinned broadly. Let it come. Let them all come. A light flared suddenly in the gloom ahead of him, sharp and distinct after the blue-white glare of the lamps, followed by the faint sound of footsteps splashing through the slime. Valentine's smile widened, and he drew his gun. A dark figure appeared in the tunnel ahead, silhouetted against the light. It stopped a respectful distance away, calm and silent, a ball of glowing clear white light bobbing at its shoulder. The figure looked human, but Valentine wasn't in the mood to make allowances. In fact, he felt rather like shooting it anyway on general principles. And then the figure spoke in a calm, collected voice that had the flat perfection of a machine, computer disguised to prevent identification.
I didn't mean to alarm you, good sir, but you'll understand that in our position it pays to be cautious, if not downright paranoid. Allow me to give you the first part of the current password. New.
Hope. Rather an obvious choice, I would have thought, but then no one asked my opinion. May I ask who you are?
The figure moved slowly forward, taking its time so that Valentine wouldn't feel threatened. It finally came to a halt before him, bent almost in two under the low roof, and Valentine's interest increased as he realized that any identifying signs were concealed inside a long, flowing cape. Even more interesting, there was nothing inside the cape's hood. No face, no head, nothing at all. The ball of light bobbed cheerfully at the figure's shoulder, bright and clear, and Valentine had to tone down his vision.
I am Hood, coordinator between the Clone and Esper Undergrounds and the Cyberrats. And you, sir?
Valentine Wolfe, patron and advisor to the Undergrounds. I've heard of you, Hood. The shadow in the background, the presence behind the throne, so to speak. I and the rest of the patrons are required to reveal our identities. The Espers insist on it. But you alone are allowed anonymity. I wonder why.
Because I'm valuable to them, and as long as they need me, they indulge me. I've heard of you, Valentine, but then I suppose everyone has. You've pumped quite a lot of money into the Undergrounds by all accounts, but I have to say I can't see why. You are heir to the Wolf Clan. You stand to inherit everything. What on earth do you need that you have to come to the Undergrounds to get it?
Sorry, I never tell everything on a first date.
As you wish. I wonder what the undergrounds want this time that such important matters as you and I had to be summoned so urgently.
It had better be important. I feel quite naked without my usual persona. Shall we go?
Of course. It's not far now. After you.
Oh, no. After you.
The Cape's hood bobbed once in what might have been agreement or humor, and Hood turned and led the way down a side tunnel that, if anything, smelled even worse. Valentine followed close behind, his gun still in his hand. He flushed most of the drugs from his system, but kept a few in reserve, just in case. Normally, the underground only summoned its patrons one at a time, so that if they were captured, they wouldn't be able to identify anyone else. Something important must be in the wind for two to be needed. Valentine studied Hood's enigmatic back thoughtfully. The lack of a face was interesting. The underground was almost fanatical in its need to know exactly who it was dealing with. It could be a holographic disguise, but nothing less than an S-blocker would protect Hood's thoughts from an Esper's probing mind, and the underground wouldn't tolerate that for a second. Hood, a supplier of money, reportedly well-connected, he worked well with both the clone and Esper undergrounds, which was rare. They didn't trust easily, and there were few indeed who'd earned the trust of both. As if to underline that thought, Hood and Valentine came to a sudden halt before the first warning sign. It was a dead man hanging from the ceiling like a broken puppet. Its arms and legs had been smashed, with white points of splintered bone protruding from the bloody flesh. The corpse slowly raised its head to look at Hood and Valentine, and its eye sockets were empty. Blood spilled down the colorless cheeks like thick crimson tears. It opened its mouth, and maggots poured down its chin.
Go back. Go back now.
Valentine looked at Hood.
Be honest. Would this scare you if you were a crack squadron of the Empress's guards?
Not really. But then I've seen it before. They insist on running this routine even when they know it's me. I think they just do it for the practice.
The dead man scowled at them.
Turn back. I mean it. I'm not kidding.
Oh, shut up. I've seen scarier things than you in my daydreams.
He probably has. This is Valentine Wolf. The Valentine Wolf.
The dead man disappeared between one moment and the next. The smell stayed pretty much the same, though. The empty hood looked at Valentine.
I've heard of you.
Valentine smiled.
Everyone's heard of me. Can you hear something?
A low roar began from somewhere behind them, building steadily in volume. The tunnel floor vibrated under their feet. Thick ripples surged across the surface of the slime. A growing pressure built in the air, like the wave of compressed air that precedes an underground train. The roar grew louder, and the floor shook. Valentine looked quickly about him, but there was nowhere to run except further down the tunnel. The roar was deafening now, the pressure of the air flat and heavy against his face. Hood was standing very still, as though frozen in place by shock. Then, a vast wave of rushing water came bursting through the tunnel toward them, thundering forward like a runaway train.
They've opened the damned sewers! Grab onto something or we'll be swept away!
The tidal wave loomed up before them, filling the tunnel, and then it was gone. No water, no noise, nothing at all. The air was quiet and calm and undisturbed. Valentine let his breath out slowly.
You bastards.
A voice in Valentine's head crowed triumphantly.
Got you. I don't just do corpses, you know.
Hood shook his head slowly.
We did ask for it, didn't we?
Just practicing. I never get to do anything down here. No one comes for ages. I don't know why we bother keeping a watch. Go straight ahead and take the second left. Meeting's just ahead. You're expected. And tell them I could do with a drink!
There was a lot Valentine felt like saying, but he didn't. He had his dignity to consider. He looked at Hood.
You can't get good help these days.
It never pays to underestimate Espers. They know everything you're thinking.
Oh, I doubt that. Anyone who enters my mind does so at their own peril after all the things I've done to it.
Good point. How did someone like you ever get involved with the underground in the first place?
Valentine smiled.
My experiments with various unusual substances led me to rumors of a new, very experimental drug that could make an esperant of anyone, even from those with absolutely no family history of psionics. If there is such a drug, I want it. Esp is one of the few experiences still unknown to me. Just the thought of something so new and vital makes my mouth water. I must have it. Pursuit of this drug brought me to the elves in the underground, and for the first time I realized what a potential power base they represented. With their help, I could attain heights of power I would never otherwise have dreamed of. The Espers will break free eventually, but it's inevitable. They are the wave of the future, the next evolutionary step for humanity. And I intend to ride that wave as far and high as I can. Who knows, it might even carry me to the Iron Throne itself. Now, wouldn't that be something? Of course, I'd have to kill my father and family first. I'm quite looking forward to that.
He stopped talking suddenly. It seemed to him that he was saying entirely too much to someone he barely knew. He didn't know why. But spilling his secrets to a comparative stranger definitely wasn't like him. He took out his silver pillbox, took out a tab, and pressed it against the side of his neck, over the vein.
Just a little something to wake me up.
He smiled broadly as the jolt kicked in.
Tell me about yourself, Hood. What brought you into our little world of treason and subterfuge?
I was part of the security force responsible for tracking down and eliminating the cyberrats. But the more I learned of them, the more I grew to understand and then envy their unrelenting search for truth and freedom. The Emperor stays in power because of people controlling information, regulating how much we're allowed to know about anything. You can't protest against a thing if you don't know it's happening. Most of what we know is based on lies and distortions. The cyberrats show me parts of the world I've never seen before. And having seen, I couldn't close my eyes again. My growing contacts with the cyberrats led me to the underground, and the more I learned of their struggle, the more I sympathized. It took me a long time to convince all the various elements of my sincerity, but my connections with the Empress's own security forces made me an invaluable ally. I have proved my worth. So the man who once hunted rebels now works to protect them. Such is life. I've always felt a little irony was good for the blood. I'm intrigued by your interest in the Esper drug. I assure you, it's very effective.
How do you know?
Because I took it. I volunteer. In fact, I insisted. I'd seen so much I'd never seen before, and I wanted to see even more. The results were interesting. Minor telepathy, some projected imagery, similar to what we just saw in the tunnel. I'm a match for a born Esper, but I see deeper and more clearly now than I ever did before. Theoretically, stronger doses of the drug should produce stronger effects, but there have been unfortunate side effects in others who have tried the drug.
Valentine smiled serenely.
That's part of the thrill of experimenting with a new drug, the risks and discoveries. Though I do wish they'd stop changing the meeting place. Every time I have to walk a little further and pass through even more disgusting scenery to get there.
Hood shrugged.
Basic security. Keep moving, keep looking over your shoulder, and keep everyone else off balance. The Empress has a lot of people trying to find the underground, and they've got a much bigger budget than we have.
Technically speaking, this isn't actually the underground. We're not that far from the surface, just in between the inner and outer spheres. I think they just call it the underground to confuse people.
Understandable. And you must admit, saying you're part of the underground sounds a lot better than saying you're one of the in-betweenies.
Valentine smiled politely, and they walked a ways in silence. They both knew that by now unseen minds were probing theirs to make sure they were who they were supposed to be. They also knew that if either of them had even looked like failing the test, they'd be dead. Nothing was allowed to threaten the underground. Valentine and the man called Hood rounded a corner, ducked under a low entrance, and stepped out of the cramped tunnel into a brightly lit giant cavern of gleaming metal. Hood's ball of light snapped out. Multicolored wires crawled across the walls, hung dangling from the high ceiling, and disappeared into conduits like snakes sliding into their holes. Mysterious, bulking machinery jutted out of the walls, crowding each other for space.
The floor was covered with debris, smashed and broken pieces of high tech, some recent, some apparently not. There were living things in the center of the floor, but Valentine chose not to look at them just yet. He straightened up slowly with a grateful sigh and massaged his aching back with both hands.
You're the tech expert, Hood. Where the hell are we this time? Looks like a repairman's nightmare.
An old workstation by the look of it. Abandoned and forgotten and renovated by the Severants. There are lots of places like this between the various worlds within Golgotha. Places that served a purpose once, but were left behind as technology moved on. The Severants love them, play with them for hours. They've got hundreds of refuges like this that don't appear in current computer records anymore.
It's a dump.
Well, yes, but you have to admit it does smell better than the sewers.
Actually, I quite like dumps. They appeal to my preference for chaos. I love the patterns they make.
He giggled cheerfully, and Hood looked at him. Valentine looked back. And then the two of them walked forward to bow courteously to the Esper representatives in the middle of the great metal chamber. As always, the representatives hid their true identities behind telepathically projected images. They might have been there in person, or they might have been sending the images from somewhere else. It was a talent that Valentine greatly envied. The Esper leaders were a mystery, and they were determined to keep it that way. So a waterfall fell through the air, bubbling and gushing, coming from nowhere and going back there when it touched the floor. Strange colors came and went, and two shadows that might have been eyes hovered midway. Beside the waterfall, a swirling mandala hung upon the air, an intricate pattern of glowing lines twisting and turning in upon itself endlessly. Valentine could have watched it for hours. Next to that, a 12-foot-long dragon lay curled around a tree, light gleaming dully on its golden scales. Valentine was never quite sure whether that was one representative or two. He'd never heard the tree say anything, but then the dragon didn't have much to say either. And finally, there was the individual Valentine always thought of as Mr. Perfect. A massively muscled figure, developed almost to the point of caricature, he stood with his arms across his massive chest, staring commandingly at his visitors. Valentine always felt an overwhelming urge to sneak up behind him and goose him. Except he probably wasn't really there. There was no guarantee anyone was. The images could be coming from anywhere. They had no reality outside the recipient's mind. Valentine was familiar with that feeling. It occurred to him that Hood might be seeing something completely different. He'd have to compare notes later. He'd been quietly trying to piece together some idea of who was behind the images for some time, but to no effect. The Esper representatives were extremely paranoid about their secrets, and with good cause. The reward for Esper rebellion was death. Eventually. The cavern was silent, but the air was tense and brittle with the unspoken speech of the telepaths. Hood leaned in close beside Valentine.
I can just about tap in on what's going on. Listen through me.
A sharp prickling wrapped around Valentine's head like a halo of barbed wire, and slowly he became aware of a soft susurrus of voices filling the chamber. They meshed and intersected without colliding, 100 voices speaking all at once, without confusion or loss of meaning. The voices were more than just words. Thoughts and feelings and impressions rolled around each other, adding tartness and flavor. And underlying the music of gathered minds, the hard, unyielding beat of 6 major minds, conferring, directing, and deciding. Valentine's mind swayed with the rhythm, but held itself apart and intact. The impact would have been too much for the normal human mind to cope with, but Valentine's mind wasn't normal anymore. Not after all the things he'd done to it. He hung on the fringes, savoring what he could, fascinated.
If this is what the Esper drug can do, I want it. And to hell with what it costs me.
He sensed as much as heard Hood's laughter beside him. And then Hood moved away, and the link was broken. Valentine rocked on his feet, shrunk once again to the narrow margins of his own mind. Faint traces of the experience remained with him, leaving him hungry for more. Valentine smiled wryly. Presumably that had been Hood's intention, to get him off balance and at the same time concentrate his attention on ways of getting the Esper drug for himself. Except Valentine knew all about drugs, and bowed to none of them. He had other business here besides the Esper drug.
The underground was a route to power, and that came first. Always. He looked round sharply as four men with the same face entered the chamber from another entrance. They wore carefully distinct clothing, but they moved in the same way, and their faces held the same thoughts. Clones. Presumably representatives for the clone underground. They were tall and slender, almost impossibly graceful, and had a natural gravitas that went beyond dignity. Valentine knew a natural leader when he saw one. Whatever they were all here to discuss, it must be pretty damned important. The clone leaders rarely appeared in person. They were followed in by three women with the same face, and Valentine's interest was piqued. He'd seen that face before, seen it on an Esper called Stevie Blue, who died at the Empress's feet after humiliating her in front of the whole court with a pie in the face. She'd been an elf, Esper Liberation Front, the more extreme edge of the Esper Underground. And now it seemed she was a clone as well. That was unusual. Not many Espers survived the cloning process. The three women looked to be in their early 20s, wearing the same leather and chains their dead sister had worn, not to mention the same t-shirt, bearing the legend, Born to Burn. They were short and stocky, with muscular bare arms, and one of them was casually hefting a solid steel dumbbell as though it weighed nothing. Long, dark hair fell to their shoulders, full of knotted ribbons. Their faces were sharp, high-cheekboned, and daubed with fierce colors. They each wore swords on their hips and leather scabbards that looked like they'd seen a lot of use. The three women looked cold and calm and very dangerous. Mr. Perfect greeted them.
Welcome, Stevie Blues. You honor us with your presence. As Espers and clones, you are uniquely suited to bring the two undergrounds together.
Even though neither of us can be sure where your loyalties really lie,
said the dragon, a long, thin tongue flickering out of his mouth.
Save the flattery and the paranoia,
said one of the Stevie Blues.
We're here to talk. Let's get on with it. Some of us have a life outside the underground.
Freaks and perverts,
growled the flowing Mundala.
Group marriages such as yours are forbidden among clones.
We're elves, first and foremost. We fight for freedom. All kinds of freedom. Want to make something of it?
Roaring flames suddenly licked up around the three elves, and the heat drove everybody back a step. It didn't affect the Stevie Blues. They were pyros and immune to their own fire. The clone representatives frowned severely, making it clear this was nothing to do with them. The waterfall began to steam slightly, and the dragon shifted uncomfortably. Mr. Perfect's face was turning red. Maybe he was present after all. Valentine grinned, enjoying the show.
Well,
said the third Stevie Blue, glaring at the mandala.
You have anything further to say?
Not at this time.
The elf's fire snapped off, and everyone breathed a little more easily.
Can't we leave you people alone together for 10 minutes?
Said a new voice, and everyone turned to look. All around the walls, view screens were flashing on as the cyberrats made their appearance. Computer hackers, techno-freaks, teenage rebels with any number of causes. Like the Esper representatives, they hid their true faces behind computer-generated images. Cyberrats faced death or reconditioning if caught. But for them, the lure and possibilities of the computer system was just too much to resist. Most of them had no interest in politics or rebellion, outside of wanting to be left alone. But the shared danger provided a common ground with the clone and Esper undergrounds. Cyberrats were unpeople, hiding behind fake IDs and a multitude of names, organizations, and corporate identities. They lived like rats in the walls of the state, foraging for what they needed when no one was looking. Ghosts haunting the machine, just for the hell of it. They helped fund the underground through various scams and computer frauds, and used the opportunity to vent their spleen on the authorities who persecuted them. There were a great number of ways to make someone's life miserable through computers, and the cyberrats knew all of them. After all, they'd invented most of them. The Esper and clone representatives looked severely about them at the grinning faces covering the walls and maintained a dignified silence. Long experience had taught them they couldn't win with the cyberrats, who spent most of their time engaged in wars of words with each other. A few voices jeered at the representatives and then were distracted by the last of the arrivals. The aristocratic backers had finally turned up, fashionably late, of course, stepping out of the entrances as though just entering the chamber was enough to soil their clothing. Valentine smiled at them, and they bowed briefly in return. There were only three of them. Most of the aristocrats, who for one reason or another backed the underground, preferred to do so discreetly and at long distance.